This is Digital Story Podcast number 1043, March 17th, 2026. Today's theme is, no matter where your photos are, this app can display them. I'm Derek Story. On my MacBook, I have Aperture Libraries, Capture One catalogs, Lightroom collections, thousands of images and photos for macOS, and a bunch of file folders. I can search across all of those proprietary catalogs, find what I want, and export them to my desktop. How? Using a magical application called Peek2. I'll explain how in its latest updates on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. I've talked about Peek2 before, and the app has evolved tremendously since our last discussion. I've been following them from the start, and it has been quite an impressive journey. They just keep going and going and going. Now, Peek2 is a competitor to Mylio, and Mylio has been around longer. Peek2 is, well, now not so much the newcomer on the block, but newer than Mylio, but really gaining ground in terms of its features and capabilities. And it's a little bit different too. So, you know, you really can't miss with either app. I just sort of fell in love with Peek2 early on and have been following them ever since. Now, just to refresh, Peek2 is an AI-powered, Mac-only software by CYME that centralizes, organizes, and searches photos and videos scattered across multiple drives. This is a very important part. And editing apps like Lightroom, Capture One, and Apple Photos. It provides a unified view, automatically analyzes media for content-based searching, identifies duplicates, and supports cloud-free collaboration. And I'll talk about some of those points during this show. For someone like me, who has everything from old Aperture libraries to Capture One catalogs to Nitro, Luminar, Photomator, Peek2 is a godsend because I can see all of those photos regardless of where they reside, what catalog they're in, and I can see them in one place. And not only can I see them, but I can also export out of Peek2 into my desktop, and I don't have to open up Capture One Pro. I don't have to open up Aperture, which I can't do anyway because it doesn't run on my MacBook. You know, I don't have to open up those apps in order to access the photos, grab them, maybe put them in a blog post or whatever I want to do. Going back a little bit, how did I get interested in Peek2? We know this history. We know this story, right? I was an avid Aperture user for years. Absolutely loved the app. And you know, it's funny, when I was in Aperture, I wasn't really dreaming of using other applications. You know, it wasn't like today. Aperture pretty much did everything that I wanted to do. And if I had to do something, you know, really crazy, then I could open the shot in Photoshop, do the crazy thing, and then I'm back to Aperture for the other 90% of my work. Life was simple then. It reminds me of like the old 1960s sitcoms. It just seemed simpler then, and it's much more complicated now. We all know Apple killed Aperture and just took it away, said no more. Those of us that were avid Aperture users, we had to figure something else out. And this is when all the chicks spread in different directions, right? Some of us went to Capture One because their interface and their file organization felt very similar to Aperture, and plus it was a very powerful raw decoder. A bunch of us went there. Many people went back to Lightroom or went to Lightroom because it was the competitor to Aperture. And of course, Lightroom was already eclipsing Aperture when Aperture was taken away. So it was a logical move for a lot of photographers to go to Lightroom. And then there's just all the other smattering of stuff that's been out there. Since those days, things have even become more interesting. It's sort of parallels like what we're seeing with cable television and streaming now. There was a time when I just watched Comcast. All my television shows and everything came through Comcast. And then now, I don't even have that anymore. That service is gone. I use their internet, but that's it. So now I have Apple TV, I have Netflix, I have Amazon Prime, I have Hulu. I have all these things just to, you know, kind of do the same thing that I was doing before. Now I do have more options, you know, more content available to me with all these services, but life is also a lot more complicated. And my photo world is very much like that too. And then add the layer of that I talk about photography for a living. And so I can't just use Lightroom all day and sit in my corner and just use Lightroom, because I think after the 30th podcast on Lightroom, you would maybe be a little bit bored with me. So I have to keep talking about other stuff because, well, that's my job. And when I talk about other stuff, that means I have to shoot and use this other stuff too. So all these cameras I talk about, all these different software applications, all that stuff, I have to keep track of. And I'm not going to change that now because I like doing what I do for a living. So I need to figure out a way to corral it. And that's where Peak2 came in. And I originally used them to access my Aperture libraries. And then I use them to pull together my Capture One catalogs. And then I haven't looked back ever since. And while I've been using them, they have just continued to improve and improve and improve. You can add just about anything you want to a Peak2 interface. And that application then will help you manage all those shots. Once you've ingested an Aperture library or a Capture One catalog, a Lightroom Classic library, whatever, once you've ingested that, then you can search across all of that content. It doesn't matter where it originally came from. You can search across all of that content using AI-powered tools, keywords, star ratings, whatever you want. So that's kind of the neat thing. For example, and I'm getting ahead of myself just a little bit here, but I just want to give you an idea of the breadth of this thing, that I can create a smart album in Peak2 of all my 3-star images. And then that smart album will display 3-star images from Aperture, from Capture One Pro, from Nitro, on and on and on, all in one smart album. It doesn't make any difference where they came from. So you can just imagine how useful a tool like this is for people who are not just a one application kind of guy or gal. They, you know, use different stuff. They maybe use a file system a lot. A lot of my images are in file folders. They're organized file folders, but they're in file folders. So I can use DxO PhotoLab or Nitro. And so all of those need to be accounted for as well. Peak2 has done a very good job refining that part of it. Their AI object recognition for search is fantastic. Now, it's not perfect, but what it does is it gets you in the ballpark so that you can find your image. And what I really love about it is I don't have to keyword because the other thing you also know is I hate keywording. So any sort of AI object recognition is greeted with open arms from this desk here. Let's talk about some of the new stuff. And I've had people ask me questions about some of the new stuff. These are over recent versions, right? These aren't necessarily just last week, but over recent versions. One of them, and I love, love, love this, is called Workspaces for Apps. This is in Peak2. So when you're looking at the Peak2 interface, and by the way, I have an article running on Live View. I'll put the link in the show notes. And it has screenshots and descriptions and more information about all the stuff I'm talking about in the podcast. So you can go there and see visual illustrations of what I'm discussing, including Workspaces for Apps. So Workspaces for Apps is a new addition to what they also have called sources. An Aperture library is a source, a Capture One catalog is a source. all of those things are sources, and you know, you can point Peak 2 to them and ingest them. The workspaces is different. It actually kind of integrates with the app itself, so that when I edit an image in Nitro, then that image, if I have a workspace for Nitro, which I do, then I can go to that workspace and see all the images that I've edited recently in Nitro, and they are rendered the way that they were rendered in Nitro, which is really fantastic. These pictures tend to be pictures from my file system, right? So I have them in folders, so I can point Nitro to them, and so I can point DxO Photo Lab to them, which is also part of this workspaces for apps. So I can edit a shot in DxO Photo Lab, and it'll come out one way because the tools are different. Then I can edit that same master image in the file system with Nitro, and it comes out a little differently because Nitro's tools are different. But in Peak 2, I can go to my workspaces and look at that version in DxO Photo Lab, look at that version in Nitro, and they are rendered the same way they were within the app. Crazy stuff, just crazy stuff, and it's so useful. And also the star ratings and the metadata and all the other stuff comes through. So this workspaces for apps, again, DxO Photo Lab, Luminar Neo, Nitro, and On1 Photo Raw, all of those can have their workspaces where you can see the work that you've been doing in those apps in one place in Peak 2. And then there's Peak 2 Connect. And this is a file sharing service built into the app. It's a service built into the app that enables me to share my content either within my local network or externally, but it's via a web application. So what that means is that the file server is actually built into Peak 2. You don't have to connect to something else on the cloud or somewhere else. It's within Peak 2. You set up a port, right, on your router. You open up a port and it gives you instructions how to do that. And then using the web browser, you can access your entire Peak 2 environment from a different computer, and you can lock this down to just your local network, which is what I do, because I've got computers all through the studio here, and they all can see my Peak 2 catalog, or you can do it over the web as well. So you have choices on how to do this, but it's just really nice because, you know, chances are you're gonna set this up on one computer, but that doesn't mean that you always have to go to that particular computer to see everything that you've cataloged. Now you may be wondering, well, okay, if I'm gonna set up Peak 2, I'll probably have some of the content, the original content, on the computer, but a lot of it's gonna be on drives that I plug into the computer. What happens if I unplug those drives? Can I still see the images that Peak 2 has ingested? And the answer is yes. Peak 2 will show you renderings of all that. They're preview size. They're a smaller resolution, depending on the application, all that sort of stuff that they came from. But, you know, they'll be around 1024 or 2048 on the longest side, you know, that kind of thing. Even if you don't have the hard drives that have the master images connected, you can still see everything. You can still search everything. And you can even export stuff out, but maybe not at full resolution, maybe at preview size resolution, depending on how you have everything set up. Going back to the server thing, if you have a computer set up and it has all the drives plugged into it and everything, then all of that content obviously can be shared, including the full resolution masters. However, if you just, let's say, like in my case, Peak 2 is on a laptop, if I unplug all the external drives and stuff and I take off for the hills, I can still see everything that Peak 2's ingested. I can still review all those images, search for them, and even download lower resolution versions of them. So the drives don't have to be connected. And if the drives are connected, then all the better. You have access to the masters, and all that can be shared over a local or the web. Crazy stuff, right? You're not just trapped on one computer. And then I do want to talk a little bit more about albums and smart albums, because to me, this is just craziness, good craziness. Let's say that I've taken a picture of sunflowers. I've taken pictures of sunflowers back in the early days, back in 2010, and that's in an Aperture library. Or go back even earlier, 2009, that's in an Aperture library. And then 2014, I have another sunflower shoot that's in Capture One Pro. And then 2019 in Photos for macOS, I have another sunflower shoot. And then Nitro and then DxO. So I have all these sunflower shots that I've done over the years in these different environments, edited different ways and everything. But I would love to have an album that shows all of my sunflower shots, regardless of when I took them or what application I processed them with. So Peak 2 allows that. It allows both albums and smart albums that span everything that's been ingested. So I can have my sunflowers album that draws from Aperture, Capture One Pro, Photos for macOS, Nitro, DxO Photo Lab, Lightroom, and they will all display in one album. It's really cool. It doesn't change the location of anything. You know, it works just like any other virtual copy works. That part's cool. And then the other part that I use all the time is I have 3-star albums and 4-star albums. These are smart albums, so they automatically populate. And I can see all of my 3-star images going all the way back to Aperture and all the way forward through the apps that I'm using today. Any apps that allow star ratings and conform to the, you know, kind of the standard XML way of doing it, then I can have a smart album with 3-star ratings that basically scans my entire history back, my digital history anyway, back to like 2008 or whatever it is. I don't know. It goes back farther than that, I guess. It goes back a long ways. That's another feature that I really dig. Now, I do want to give one note to Aperture users just to make sure that you're clear on how this works. If you have old Aperture catalogs or libraries, you can bring those together in Peak 2. The thing is, though, Peak 2 supports libraries from Aperture version 3.4.2 or later. Now, I think the last version of Aperture was 3.6, okay, right in there. Libraries older than that, they'll need to be updated within Aperture, but if a library is compatible with Peak 2, in other words, it's 3.4.2 or later, then you don't even need Aperture anymore. You just need the library and you need Peak 2. And you can always tell, you know, that information by doing git info on an Aperture library, and it'll tell you what version it is. I keep an old MacBook. You know those, remember those white MacBooks? I have an old one. And it still runs, and it has Aperture running on it. Now, it's slow. Boy, is it slow, but it's steady. And so I can plug in a hard drive of Aperture libraries on there, and if I discover with Peak 2 that one of my libraries that I want to have in Peak 2 is too old, then I can update it on that old white MacBook, bring it up to speed, and then put it on the drive where all my other Aperture libraries are located for Peak 2. So that's the only thing. If you kept your libraries up to date, you shouldn't have a problem. They all should be around 3.6 or so, but I didn't do that. I did it most of the time, but not all the time. So I still find myself having to do that every now and then. I want to talk a little bit more about AI search because, as noted, I'm not a keyworder. Fortunately, AI search in Peak 2 is quite good and it's getting better all the time. So I can have it search for airplanes. I can have it search for black and white shots of airplanes. I can have it search for, you know, all these different criteria that we're used to searching, and what it does is it gets me close. So gotta remember, we're searching across a whole lot of images here, all these libraries from all these years. So if it brings me within 100 shots of what I'm looking for, it's easy for me to find that shot within those 100 shots. So I'm using AI search a lot. Now, of course, if you did do keywords and text descriptions and stuff, then this feature gets turbocharged, because not only do you have AI powered object searching, but you have all the text stuff too. And that probably should take you right to where you want to go. So that search across all of your content is very helpful. Let's just bring this all together. So there are tons of other features in this app. Things like aesthetic rating, where the AI scores an image based on technical and aesthetic aspects. Fun stuff. But the bottom line for many photographers, the notion of being tied to just one photo management app for the duration of your career probably is not practical. Things change. Apps come and go. Our personal preferences evolve. Peak 2 helps us manage that evolution over the years. It allows us to experiment and change our minds. We don't have to be tied to a single photo management app if we don't want to. And for folks like me who like to experiment with workflows, it's a blessing. I have a link to it in the show notes. You can just search for it, P-E-A-K-T-O. Good stuff. Very good stuff indeed. Let's take a look at some camera news for this week. I am really excited about this first one. This is from Variety.com. I have a link in the show notes. And this is about the cinematographer for Sinners, the movie Sinners. You know, the Academy Awards were on Sunday, and it was a pretty darn good show. The trophies were spread around amongst the top films. And Sinners won Best Actor, Best Screenplay, Best Cinematographer. And what's so important about this, this is Oscar history, the first woman to win Best Cinematography. I'm going to tell you a little bit about her. Sinners DP, Autumn Durald Arkapaw, has made history. She is the first woman ever to win Oscar for Best Cinematography. Arkapaw, who is of Filipino and African-American Creole descent, is now also the first woman of color to win. In the history of the category, only three women have ever been nominated. Rachel Morrison in 2018 for Mudbound, Ari Wegner in 2021 for The Power of the Dog, and Mandy Walker in 2022 for Elvis. Arkapaw also made history as the first female cinematographer to shoot on IMAX 65mm and Ultra Panavision for Sinners. During her thank you speech, she thanked director Ryan Coogler and said, "Thank you for believing in me and thank you for trusting me. And that's the kind of guy I get to make films with." Arkapaw also thanks fellow cinematographer Rachel Morrison. She said, "I have felt so much love from all the women on this whole campaign and have gotten to meet so many people. And I just feel like moments like this happen because of you guys. I want to thank you for that." Backstage, Arkapaw was met with huge applause, speaking about women in the Dolby Theater who gave the biggest cheers. The cinematographer said, "Moments like this don't happen without women standing up for you and advocating for you. I know that this happened because of that," she added. "I've learned over the past few months going through this process that it does take a village to make stuff like this happen, but this isn't about me anymore. This is about so much more." Sinners marked her second collaboration with Coogler after the two-shot Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. Last year, she told Variety, "We support each other. I've learned how to read the story through Ryan's eyes, to understand what he needs, and to tell what is important to him." Congratulations. Oh my gosh, it was such a great win for her. If you haven't seen Sinners, it is worth a watch. If you can see it in a theater with a great sound system, it's amazing. It's an amazing movie. It was worth every nomination. Some people thought it was going to win a few more awards than it did, but it had a great night. And the cinematography was fantastic. And congratulations to Autumn Durald Arkapaw for her historic achievement. Well done. I'm back. Digital film roll that entirely fits in a 35mm camera. This is on Petapixel. I have a link in the show notes. Living up to its name, I'm Back has returned. The company is teasing its latest product, a new, quote, film roll with a new, bigger APS-C image sensor that photographers put inside their 35mm film camera to capture digital images, aiming to breathe new life into old, vintage analog camera bodies. I'm Back has been around for a long time, having released a big, bulky digital back for old 35mm cameras in 2017. 2 years later, a version for medium format film cameras arrived, still sporting a small image sensor, just a 16 megapixel type 1 over 2.33 chip. Then in 2020, I'm Back was unveiled, promising a new and improved version of its original product. However, even then, I'm Back 35 was still really big, adding significant size and heft to the film cameras. In October 2023, I'm Back returned with I'm Back Film. Which took the same concept, a digital sensor for film cameras, and put it inside a film canister type device. Although this design was much more interesting and more compact, the I'm Back Film still featured a relatively small sensor, a 20 megapixel Micro Four Thirds chip. It's nonetheless had a massive launch on Kickstarter in late 2023, which quickly led to I'm Back partnering with Yashica. Now, I'm Back founder Samuel Melo Menderos is addressing one of the biggest complaints against 2023's I'm Back Film, which didn't actually start shipping until just over a year ago. The Micro Four Thirds sensor is quite small, meaning that lenses designed for 35mm film cameras have a 2x crop factor, which isn't always a bad thing, but is a limitation for wide-angle lenses in particular. Photographers using a 28mm lens typically want the look of a 28mm lens, not a 56mm lens. The move to an APS-C size image sensor should alleviate some of these frustrations, albeit not entirely. A 1.5 times crop factor is still something photographers must contend with. Whether this dream is still worth pursuing remains to be seen, but I'm Back Roll is definitely a product to keep an eye on. And if you want to see more about it, again, I have a link in the show notes, and in the article, there's a link to the Kickstarter page if you're absolutely smitten with this concept. Let's take a look at a little virtual camera club news. Boy, it's been a nice start to our workshop season with our online events, and now we're going to start rolling into the physical workshops. You know, Rob and company, they're going to Maine here pretty soon. And then we're going to Costa Rica. We have a Route 66 workshop on the books. And by the way, there's still seats for that one. That one is still open. We're going to do the Sonoma County Hot Air Balloon Classic workshop. That one, I believe, just sold out. There's a lot of great stuff coming up. And I just appreciate the participation of this community. You know, they hop on board to the online workshops, they sign up for the physical workshops, and it just allows us to continue to come up with these ideas and to try things and to just do fun stuff that photographers enjoy doing. And so that's a general thank you to all of our listeners who participate, whether it's online workshop, whether it's a webinar, whether you sign up for a physical workshop. I just really appreciate you helping Rob and I keeping this ball rolling so that we can continue to do good stuff and have a lot of fun together. If you want to know about the workshops that still have open seats, and a lot of the online events still have open seats, a couple of the physical ones do as well, then just go to our workshops page. You can get to that via the Nimble Photographer or the Digital Story. Just click on workshop, see what's going on, get involved. It is so much fun spending time with other photographers, whether we're hanging out around a Zoom call or we're in person somewhere beautiful. I want to thank our Inner Circle members for supporting this. not only in terms of active participation, but also in terms of financially speaking. You know, $5 a month for an Inner Circle member, $7 a month for Inner Circle Bold. If you do a whole year at a time, you get big discount. And even if you're an Inner Circle Bold member and you just go to one physical workshop, you more than get the money back that you invested. And if you go to online workshops, you can come out very even for the money that you've spent by being an Inner Circle member. So, you know, if you're active, it's a no-brainer. If you just love supporting this community and this podcast, I appreciate that from the bottom of my heart. If you haven't joined us yet, I would love it if you did and join us in our online space just for Inner Circle members on Derek Story Online. A big thanks to all of you, and let's keep the ball rolling in 2026. And finally, a shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. These are the folks that have everything that we need to make beautiful fine art prints from our digital photographs. Now, one of the interesting things I was talking about looking at shots that go way back to 2008 in my history, because they're there in my Peak 2 library. Those images are quite printable. And even if the resolution is a little low for the size print that you want to make, we have the tools these days, such as, you know, super resolution that's in Photomator, or the resolution bump that's in Topaz. We have tools to take those original files, provide enough resolution and clarity to make beautiful prints from them. So your photography going way back early in the digital process can still make beautiful prints that hang on the wall. Of course, you need some good paper and some good technique, and that's where Red River Paper comes in. Once you have that file, go to the Red River Paper site. There's a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. Do a little nosing around, get some paper, and make a print from an image that you took in 2008 and put it on the wall. You will smile when you do that. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this community. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.